Tonight we are having a open forum on the topic of disability within the church and within communities. I want to make a couple of statements before I will open it, then I will open it up for dialogue and questions. In the last 15 years, there have been some great great movement among the labor people within in this country and getting jobs and getting out in the community. And I think tonight I would like to focus both on what's been happening within your community and some questions, and maybe what is the church all about with disabled folks, and we are coming out and getting involved with the mainline work within community, then beside that to get involved with our churches throughout this country. Is there any somebody wanted to kick the thing off and
Benny, what do you mean by the word disabled? What does that include?
Even though I don't like the word disabled, mm-hmm. because it means that people are not able to do anything, I don't know what is a better word. Maybe people that are different, people that may not be able to physically walk, speak, physically do something.
So you're saying that disabled, you're specifying it to the physical, not including mental or emotional or those kinds of things too?
It could. It depends on which school of thought you are referring to. I mean, there's a lot of dialogue in and among the handicapped community about what words to use and what words not to use.
What are some of those other words? I've heard the expression persons with disabling conditions or something like that.
Disadvantage. All them words to me have some really some problems with that. I think we need to come up with a new vocabulary to talk about. The Google language, I think, we also want to be included. When the women liberation movement, we are also involved with that whole liberation, wanting to be recognized, wanted to be more accepted among the general public and among the church.
I haven't seen a lot of what the church is doing. I know they have ministries among the deaf for many years. I know they made Braille books and booklets and magazines and stuff like that for the blind. And of course, we got a long history of social service agencies that I suppose handle a number of folks who come into this category. But other than people putting in ramps in churches so that physically disabled people can get in, I really haven't heard a lot about the church's ministry.
In Seattle, I've seen at the cerebral palsy center in the north end of town where several different congregations will either send a bus or cars and come and pick people up. And we used to pick up a John Davis ourselves until we moved to Puyallup. And then they would come, you know, right in their wheelchair. George had rigged up the van so he could use the seatbelts and pass them.
So they would bring them to church?
Yeah, bring them right into the church, and they'd love that. Real helpful. And then the city itself, I don't know how many other cities do that, but we have more bus service now where the wheelchair can go right onto the bus. Which is so that they can get out and go to work, those that are able to and want to. And of course you see them in their motorized wheelchairs right along the street too. And hopefully the drivers are careful. But they're in many areas.
Outside of physical stuff, like wheelchairs and wood shops and work places, there's some education stuff that have been printed for different education stuff among the people that persons that are mentally incapable, mentally handicapped folks. I know of, I just heard a couple weeks ago, I think Inna Hung was healing and talk about a church body that is beginning to raise some Sunday school stuff. I think it's about time for that to happen. I think, we churches that want to get involved with Sunday school for them folks have a hard time trying to put something together that they can relate to. And you get to see some professional people do some thinking, working out, and putting things together.
We were talking the other night, you know, about motivation, but Art Olson's nephew, that didn't seem to have any motivation. He was just content to stay home. You know, you see any more about that?
I think motivation comes from within inside what you are hearing people saying and how you can process that. Motivation for me really became crucial within my life once some goals were set, and I wanted to contain the goals. People can provide them energy, but I need to set about and take advantage of the stuff to, you know, get really nobody else is going to do it for us. They can provide the means, but we need to walk in that path.
I think the point of education is a real important one. In a church I was involved in a couple of years ago, I was working with the youth, and we had a month, what was kind of like Handicapped Awareness Month, and it was real good. It helped the kids to get in touch with a little bit. Like we had one day when we rented a bunch of wheelchairs and they went through the mall with those, and they got to feel what it was like to, you know, be in that kind of situation, just in that. And then we did different Bible studies, and I'm an occupational therapist and work a lot with the disabled, so I did some leading too of my experience with that. And the kids really started to understand, to see what it felt like to be looked at differently from being, even though, you know, just seeing somebody in a wheelchair, you assume that, you know, they felt looks like, oh, they're really different. But that kind of education thing is really good, and I think that is starting more around, and our youth pastor is the one that brought it up, and then we worked on it together.
But, I remember it was before I began to do the stuff. There was some talk among the Megalithic Church to get them some done. I didn't see it, but I heard it like going on within the office on 422 Fifth Avenue with Harry Wick, the American Lutheran Church, the handicapped coordinator at that time put David Price in a wheelchair. David Pray, for many of you that don't know who he is
he's a custodian here, I think.
Yeah,
right. He's the
Royal Anderson.
That's what I heard.
He is the president of the American Lutheran Church, and he went totally crazy for one day, and I hear that he didn't even get out of his office. He was so paranoid.
No, but that's not true. No, he didn't stay the whole time in his office. No. He did spend a day in the wheelchair, and there were other folks in the office that, you know, one tried to spend half a day blindfolded and things like that. As a result of that, you know, the doors come in, the place says, now these button you push and the door comes open by itself, so you can get, so people can come in there, even with if they have crutches or something. But out of that day came some pretty major just physical changes.
I mean, before the door to get into the office was about 20 pounds to open that dumb thing. I mean, they were so...
Well, it was a double door, you know, about 5 feet apart, so it was, you know, if you're going to be going through your crutches, there's no way. You're going to get knocked back and flat. Yeah. Another thing is that I noticed rather dramatically, and probably came out of that one too, is that most conventions now have a signer.
Yeah.
And there was a time when, you know, that was just unheard of.
Yeah.
And you began to pick up. The summer's youth gathering, most of the sessions were signed.
Word for what?
Signing.
For the deaf.
Signing.
For the deaf.
I remember an awareness night we did in Grand Forks, North Dakota, congregation that I was a part of at that time. We had a potluck dinner. Nobody knew that I was going to do some stuff. And the minister came up to the lady and tied her hands behind her back. She had no idea what was going on with family night. And he said, you cannot untie you. And she was so paranoid. She loved coffee. And I remember she loved coffee, and her husband offered to give her some coffee. And she, we waited till we get home. And I remember some other person trying to get into walking around the church blindfolded, and some great stuff could come out of that, to be able to have a sense of what people that are physically handicapped go through.
They used the puppets at our church, the ones that the kids made and had the little blackboard that's blind and a little deaf girl, and they did signing and all that sort of thing.
And the
puppet, well, the person who worked the puppet stood there all dressed in black, you know, so they weren't that noticeable. And then they would bring out, for instance, for the little blind fellow, the fact that he loved to dance and all these positive things that he could do, and they didn't zero in completely on his. They let you know he was blind and all. Mm-hmm. It was just very effective. And then I saw where the kids had, a couple of my daughters worked with this, and they had gone to another congregation, and not only showed that part, but they came back a couple of weeks later and had the type of thing you talked about, where people were in wheelchairs and, you know, tried to get into a bathroom and up a hill and that sort of thing. And then they also showed how what it's like for a slow learner. Mm. They asked these little normal kids, you know, that could learn quickly, to stand up and turn around. Well, they jumped up and turned around, and Janice said, just a minute, I want you to sit down again, and now I'm going to give you a list. She gave them a list of 12 things they were to do. You know, and then he erased the list, okay, do them. You know, and of course nobody could do them in the right sequence. So they were showing what it's like for someone else to try and do a couple things.
Talking about puppets. The American Lutheran Church really have done some, I think, some really great stuff in the last 6 years. They created some puppets, some marvelous, I think they call the Children of Lord puppets.
Yeah, the same ones.
Yeah, that's what she's talking about.
They're sitting in our living room.
Yeah, what are they called?
They look real.
Children of what?
Children of the Lord.
Children of the Lord.
The kids or something. Every
district
like that.
Has some, I think.
Yeah, Janice went to two workshops. She should bring them up here. Janice went to two workshops back there. Two-day workshops. About 3 years apart.
The kids are really good.
A lot in Seattle. And they constructed these things, you know, like on a clay form. They're very real looking.
You should have a set of them for Narnia.
At this present moment, there is some company that produces puppets is suing the ALC for.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, is that
funny? Oh, wow. Right. They've had to be careful not to mix. Somebody asked, but
it was
our
all,
kids use,
you know, all taken care of, and because it's catching on now.
It's the copyright kind of thing.
So we're, as of just last Monday, we're going to court.
Good
boy. So we're going to fight it soon.
It'll be good, though.
But I think it's a great minister, and that's really helpful.
Like for those that had problems with using their hands, you know, whether they couldn't get them straightened out and all. They had the little youngsters who were there to learn, put a piece, somebody would put masking paper on their hands and say, okay, now write your name. Mm-hmm. Do a little simple puzzle with your eyes blindfolded. Many, many experiences.
The the interesting thing about it is that the guy that created the first set, him and I are very good friends. We've been friends from way, way back, even before I got involved with Breakthrough. And I thought he was, he would tell me his idea one day, and I thought it was going to be fantastic. Mm-hmm. And, I've seen him a couple years later, and seen him up in Alec, Minnesota, at a school, and man, they are marvelous, for kids. I would recommend all everybody do have them with your kids sometime. I think kids are really the to become educated so early in life. What is it to be different? Can be very good. I spent 20, 30 minutes today talking to these students in first to sixth grade, I think. And they had all kinds of, they were simple questions, but they were very important questions. Why people are the way they are.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, with mainstreaming now, I know in my work, in where they're taking some kids where they're able to go into the classroom, the disabled kids, that is great, because I think this generation is growing up with more of an acceptance because they understand more. And it's not just keep the handicap home in the closet, because that's what used to be the embarrassment. And now that is changing so much to where I saw the kids would just interact every bit as much with the kids in their wheelchairs and on their crutches, and even though they walked different or whatever, did different and had to sign, they would still interact. So they're learning acceptance growing up in the school. And that was really neat to see and to watch them interact on the playground. Mm-hmm. So the mainstreaming is a great thing for education in our in the school system and generally for as much as possible, to get out.
I've noticed too, when we send some of our little patients home that are like on a respirator, still have a tracheostomy, they'll teach the whole family some sign language, even the little 2-year-olds. Mm-hmm. They started teaching one little type when he was 5 months old to use signs more and whatever.
The 504 Act of 1973 to ensure that disabled people can have the right to public education has been a very good step into the mainstream programming. If I may interject a little bit about 504. I've been trained as a specialist in the state of Minnesota by a organization out of Beverly Hills, California, with a trained mass of disabled people throughout the country to be really the own advocate, to know what the rights are. People sometimes ask me if 504 is for everybody. My comment is that it needs to be done on an individual basis. If a person is capable, mentally capable of being mainstream, mm-hmm. But if a person is not capable of being mainstream, that is okay too. I think people need to be aware of that not everybody can be mainstream, and that is okay too.
An example of, I think, what's happened in the ALC, about 6 years ago, I was at Outlaw Ranch for their camp staff training. At that time, Stevie Gilbertson was on that staff, and he's a retarded fellow. He was about 28 years old. And the camp director there really had to keep his feet to the fire to go against the camp board and so forth, to have somebody who was retarded on staff. But during that week, it was amazing the effect that Stevie Gilbertson's presence had just in that first week of training with these, you know, these college folks and these big jocks and so forth, trying to impress these, you know, darling girls and so forth, you know, all kind of afraid to really be with kids. And here's little Stevie Gilbertson, went right up to him and kind of punch him a little bit and put his arm around him and kind of snuggle his head up to him and says, "Are you my friend?" And it just melted those guys. And it was probably the most freewheeling, permission kind of giving person. There's no question about it. And I know from that experience, the word's gotten around, and there's other staffs around, camp counselor staffs, who are now going out of the way to, you know, to recruit someone like that on their camp staff, for the very reason you're talking about. Not just to, you know, not just to do them a favor, but because they have a tremendous ministry. And
I've been on staff at bike camp for the last 6-7 years, being a resource person, and for the last 2 summers, I was out at a camp on full-time staff, and it really amazing the kids, how the kids kind of in the act about who is really disabled in that situation, and it become a whole different kind. They look at people in a whole different sense. As if, you know, I mean, I think somebody may have said something once against who I was about my handicap at camp, but it was really amazing. I mean, the behavior of kids, knowing that handicapped people, physically and mentally handicapped people, can be part of a counseling staff, either a teaching staff, lend itself to the other kids to say, "Hey, we need to also be there." To really be, I know that you told me a couple of days ago almost that you have some handicapped people that come up here and to work.
Yep, we've had them on staff for at least the last 2 years, and before that too. Both physically handicapped as well as others who were emotionally or mentally so. And each time, what obviously what happens to the whole community is just amazing, but especially to a couple of people who zero in and become their close friends and supporters. And just, it would be tough to guess who's going to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Just a marvelous experience to do that. We were to have three with us this week after next from Tacoma, and the young woman who was setting that up for us with the agency left the agency, and suddenly it all fell apart, but we're still trying to work on it.
I think one of the unique stories within doing what I'm doing, with a young boy in Grand Forks, North Dakota, he was a junior in high school. Non-Lutheran congregation, it was. I think it was one of a church that would, it was a youth meeting I went to. And he came up out of my lecture and asked them if he could, asked me if he could take me along for 1 week within the Grand Forks area, because at that time I was doing a lot of visitation with families and stuff. And I thought, well, Wednesday night, I normally go into the drop-in center to drop in on a bunch of mentally handicapped folks to play bingo and play games and so on and so forth. And I debated if I should take him along because he was so, didn't have no idea, but I took him along. He gave me a ride to this thing. And man, in 20 minutes, he was just one of them. And I'd seen him a couple years later, and he was still involved with handicapped folks. And it just amazed him that they were see what made people's spirits and if they like what they see and
that's great.
Unbelievable responsibilities.
I know in my experience I've been touched as probably the most deeply by two or three different people with handicapping conditions, and two in particular were so severely involved, they were functioning at 1 to 2 months, and they're the kind of people that a lot of people say they don't even have a right to live, I mean, you know, or question that, you know, that what is the purpose of this life? And they were people that, two girls that I had for therapy, and after having them for some months, I recall one day in particular when I was not having a good day, and I go, oh, I just as soon as she didn't come in for outpatient therapy and such, but in she came, and through that whole half hour session with her, such peace flowed through her to me. I was totally blessed and ministered to in such a powerful and strong way. And here she was about 3 years old and she functioned at about 1 month, you know. But she had this beautiful smile and her heart was just giving. And here she was giving to me, quote, normal person. And there, that day, I was so much more handicapped than she was, so much more in need, and then here flowed, you know, this. And so I've been touched. And another instance of working with a little autistic boy who was really withdrawn. Mm-hmm. And my first encounter with him, they forgot to tell me not to touch him because he just would send him off in a tantrum. So over the first 20 to 30 minutes I was with him, I was trying to control him by touching him so he just wouldn't take off. And within 2 months, as he was getting on the school bus to say goodbye, he paused a moment and turned and gave me a great big hug as he got on the bus. And it's one of the most precious things that has ever happened to me. And here was this boy that, autistic, you know, they're kind of, you think they're in their own world, but hey, something had gotten through in the change from the first 2 months. And so it is blessed once people get involved with, you know, just another experience, a couple experiences that I've had and been touched so deeply, you know, just the inner core of my being. And here I think sometimes, quote, I'm normal. And teaching that I've done is sometimes we all have our handicaps, and boy, a lot of them, the least of which is physical, sometimes mental. I think spiritually we're much more handicapped than in those other ways.
I've been, for the lack of a days in my legs, I've been using a family situation that I've really been blessed and ministered through. Family from Kansas City that have a daughter that have cerebral palsy and also very dependent. I cannot speak and cannot walk. I remember one night sitting at the kitchen table eating with Nazi, and Nazi bubbling all over the place, you know, her material is so beyond measurement, even the psychologist cannot even touch her material. And Nazi grinned a lot, especially when she's probably thinking about all kinds of stuff, but maybe it is a good thing that she can't verbalize all the stuff that she's thinking about, because she, in the morning, she had her own way of talking. She would wake up about 5 o'clock in the morning and just make all kinds of noises and laugh. You know, everybody else is asleep in your house. But anyway, that night I was eating and didn't really pay any attention to what was going on. Natalie pointed to her book. She had a book with all kinds of pictures and words. Yeah. And here is a girl that didn't know me too well. I mean, I just began to really get involved with the family. She got out of Woodsburg, we got her Woodsburg out. She said, I love Betty. And it was just, I mean, it just sent cold shivers on my back, knowing that the profound words that, and the beauty of her spirit to be able to communicate that with all the other stuff that had gone on in her life.
Leo Bustead tells a really good story, which is, I think it is too long for me to tell, but its main point is that people, disabled people, have a special gift, and sometimes when we first meet them, we don't know what the nature of the gift is, but there's a gift about them, and God has meant them to be a gift. And I think your two stories and Benny's stories really highlight that.
I've read some books on that too, and there seems, in my observation, working with them for a few years, that there is a love, and a simple love. They don't get so caught up into this world and all the pressures and things. A lot of times, sometimes mentally they're not able, but there is a power of a love that I know I have been, you know, obviously touched very deeply by, and reading it, well, Edna Hong's book, Bright Valley of Love, if you've read that
beautiful
one,
book.
It just beautiful. Is powerful, and there's yeah. others, you know, like that indeed, beautiful. I think that is very, and you can't explain it, but the experience of it is beyond words, I guess. It really is. I think that's true. It's a privilege, you know, and that's what hopefully will all come more, you know, as people become, education grows, and I think it's like the fear of the unknown and of not understanding handicapping conditions in people, that then they're afraid of them because they don't know how to respond, how to talk to them, how to act. That's what I really found in trying to educate people and even parents as to how to care for their kids. Treat them as you would your own. Discipline them the same. You know, I mean, don't treat them like they're fragile or going to break, because that's a disservice.
That pushes a very painful experience I had with a couple in a parish I served, that I think they already had two or three children, and then they had a child that was mongoloid, and they had just no preparation, and they decided not even to bring a kid home. Mm. No. And I've really agonized over all the stuff that we write about preparation for that first baptism, whatever it was, for the couples that are expecting a child. And there's hardly ever any mention about the possibility,
yeah.
you know, that this is, quote, a normal child. And it's I've really tried to press in getting at some of that kind of thing. But the publishing houses, you know, they for some reason, there's a resistance, though, at that time, to even consider the possibility. And I really wrestle with that. How do you prepare?
One of our pediatricians has gone into the high schools and talks about birth defects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very, very plain, straightforward information.
Yeah.
I like the word Down syndrome rather than calling them mongoloids.
Yeah. That was at that time what they called
yeah.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what that story Leo tells about is about
yeah.
a pastor who his wife has just given birth to a mongoloid
mm-hmm.
child, and he doesn't know how to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And his doctor tells him that, you know, these people are gifts, and you know, we might not know what the nature of the gift is initially, but
in 1934, I worked with a guy named Wayne Nelson. He probably was one of the most shabby dudes I have ever been with. He was at that time the development coordinator for disabled within mental health, and we went to a governor's conference in Bismarck, North Dakota, and I had an idea in my head one night, and I said, Wayne, given that you're Christian, I said, Wayne, what would happen if we would write some stuff on to be able to give the clothing, to be able to call the parents that want to have children and talk about the possibility of having a disabled folks. I remember what the remark was. The remark was, yeah, it'd be a good idea, but people would blow the people would burn their book because they don't want to even, they don't want to deal with that kind of stuff. And we were thinking about doing some of that stuff because of some stuff that was going on in North Dakota at that time. We were thinking about getting involved with them, you know, getting the clergy person to write themselves, but because what do you do with the question that really bugged me, my mother, who was 21 when she had me, she had no idea. And then the guilt that came after I was born, of what did I do, God? Why did you damn me? I'm glad that my mother never really went through that whole period. I mean, she got a message from a Catholic nun in a Catholic hospital where she was at. The Catholic nun said that you've been blessed with a spiritual child. And did some stuff that is according to that kind of thing also. But she always thought that she always had that attitude, even though that maybe she gone deep inside know the reason why I'm handicapped. She had some problems in her early time of being pregnant. She was having some problems. And,
we haven't talked about the religious connotations of some of this, have we?
What kinds of questions are you referring to?
Well, how about it? You know what I mean, don't you?
I'm not sure if you're talking about, you know.
Well, you're more articulate than I am.
You do pretty well, friend.
I think we've been talking about faith questions all night.
We are talking about...
I've seen some really interesting situation at St. Paul's parish, which I'm a member of, about a year and a half ago. We just started the Sunday school program about 2 years ago, after not having one for some time. All of a sudden, we had a whole bunch of younger children again. And one member of the parish has a mentally retarded son who is, I was 21 or 22 now. And the person in charge of the Sunday school had invited him to bring Butch to participate in the Sunday school. And there were four men in the congregation who had a fellowship group who made it their special project to each spend one Sunday with Butch in the Sunday school and work on a special program. And the growth that has happened in Butch is really amazing. He really feels a part of the family, a part of the body. And in fact, and we've given him, he's been given some special awards and things along the way as encouragement. And now the Sunday school normally goes through the liturgy of the word and then they come in at the offering. And now Butch wants to come to church every Sunday so that he can participate as an adult. And at the Seder meal last year, he was drinking wine with the adults and really feels a part of the community. And it's really encouraging to see that happening in him and also the experience for the people who taught Butch. It was a really special thing.
And that really bring out to me what Paul was saying in first. Paul was talking about when he said that there's no difference between Jew and Greek, male and female. We could also put in the line of handicap and non-handicap, that we are one. And we should be able to look at somebody for who they are, not what they may be able to offer. So,
remember what Harold Peters did in our family. He was mentally retarded, lived three doors down, and his mom at two different times had mastectomies. And my dear wife offered to take Harold into our house. The first time she went to the store with Harold, she spent most of her time explaining that he wasn't her child. How terrible. You know, and then finally caught on to what was happening. And then how he, well, he just turned around the family. And there, that family, I heard from Harold's dad about 2 days ago. He has Alzheimer's disease now. Out of the blue, he wrote me a letter. I haven't heard from him. I don't think I've ever received a letter from him before in my life. But he was a very tough, strict parochial school teacher. But every one of the kids in that family, the five kids, grew up to be just marvelous people. His sister heads the sexual abuse of children program in Seattle. And all have done marvelous things, but it's almost all because of Harold and Harold's mom. And he was, he died at about age 17, but he loved bananas and trains. I still hear Harold talking about trains and bananas, and birthdays was a big bunch of bananas.
But you're more concerned with those who are physically handicapped rather than the mentally.
I'm concerned about all people.
Well, yes, but I mean, primarily in your case, you're physically handicapped and not mentally handicapped, right? Well, let's assume that anyhow. I've had some experience in the last year that a close relative having multiple sclerosis, looking into some of the possibilities of degenerative diseases, which is oxygen under pressure administered to people with degenerative diseases such as that, such as a multiple sclerosis, senility, muscular dystrophies, and things like that. And it's also used in Denver particularly for those that are overcome with carbon dioxide with very great success and things of that sort. But it has people, some of those, particularly in multiple sclerosis, it's reversible. See, usually they say that it's an irreversible thing. But with that, by taking these, see, they put them in the tank, and they put oxygen under 2.5 pressures. And they have to put it, start it slow, and then build it up. And then we, at the end of it, reduce it slowly, see. And of course, they have to be careful, because the oxygen's quite combustible. It just kind of close, and it's a very, it's controversial because it is so, so dangerous, and there's, of course, but in some cases it's worked miracles. You know, so.
I think one of the interesting things, I remember when Karen Quinlan first got in a coma, and the amazing of U.S. you may at what was the worst while for the 10 years I lived. There was a lot of people that really admire, that really talk about Karen as a sample of hopeful who they was, and I have a friend of mine who got in an accident when she was in 10th grade, and I haven't seen her for about 5-6 years out of high school. And saw her for the first time and did not even recognize her. And she would just, could not communicate at all. And a very powerful person without words. I remember she came into my room one night. I knew Peggy before she got in an accident. She was a very, very kind person. She took my Bible and she opened it, she opened to the book of quizzes and pointed to the word love. And her whole face that light up. And to me, the signs say these people are really living testimonies of to help other people to enjoy life. Because they enjoy life.